Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Food Lover Selective, where we discuss food on and beyond the dinner table. The Food Lover Selective is a program of the Center for Regional Agriculture, Food and Transformation, or CRAFT, at Chatham University's Folk School of Sustainability and the Environment. CRAFT's mission is to foster a transformative regional food system that is equitable, sustainable, and inclusive in Western Pennsylvania and beyond. Today, we have here Chef Christina Ramos joining us to talk about her accomplishments in the food industry as a Filipino-American chef at some of the most prominent restaurants in New York City and France, as well as her transition into the nonprofit world as a food educator, where she can share the different philosophies that guide her approach to teaching. I would also like to introduce myself. I'm Raya Añonuevo and a second-year master's degree student here at Chatham University at the Food Studies program. My interests focus on learning the different mechanisms and cultural parameters that affect our crucial understanding of the food system, such as garden-based learning, sustainability, and also diversity-inclusive culinary education.
Hey all, my name is Valeria Santos. I am a second year student at the Master in Food Studies at Chatham University. I am personally interested in food as a cultural enterprise and the role that cuisine has in the formation of national and ethnic identities. So yes, that's a little bit about me and that's it.
Hi everyone. Well, thank you everyone for having me today. This is such an awesome podcast. My name is Christina Ramos. I am born and raised in New York. I am Filipino-American, first generation, and I'm excited to be here.
Yay, perfect. So before we start the interview, we wanted to define what food systems means and what cuisine and gastronomy refer to in order for our audience to have a clearer picture when we mention those terms in our questions. So a food system is an interconnected web of activities in which relate to food production, processing, packaging, distribution, marketing, consumption, and the disposal of food. The organization of food systems reflects and responds to social, cultural, political, and economic factors. So all of us occupy a role in the food system, even if we are just consumers, and our purpose with this type of conversations is to enlighten how different actors of the food system have an influence in the way in which we engage with food and hopefully create spaces for us to go more in depth on what food means and stop making it an abstraction. So, gastronomy is defined as neither good cooking, bon cuisine, nor fine cooking, hot cuisine. It is more the establishment of rules of eating and drinking and an art of the table. Gastronomy is a discipline that surges from the fields of technology, economy, and different cultural enterprises. So when we refer to gastronomy, we are referring to those basic understandings of an aesthetic presentation of cuisine and the relationship we have when presenting food in an eloquent manner. So
thank you for defining food system and gastronomy for our audience. And welcome again, Chef Christina, and thank you. We really appreciate you being here and taking the time to chat with us today to talk about your experiences. And of course, to get things started, would you mind if I ask you about your experiences growing up as a Filipino-American in New York City? And how has New York's food scene impacted not just your taste, but also your passion for food?
So I was born in Queens, New York, which is the most diverse urban city, I think, in the globe, with a huge, huge Filipino population. So I spent most of my childhood there with a lot of family, grew up with a lot of friends that were Filipino. And, you know, then my parents wanted to pursue the, you know, quote unquote, American dream, and we moved out east. So I went from, we call it, there's a street now called in Queens, Little Manila. So I moved from Little Manila to Long Island, which was a huge change for my whole family. So I then became, I think it was like one of maybe five Asians in my school, which includes my brother. And, you know, with that, a lot of changes in my lifestyle. So I lost fluency in Tagalog. In terms of food, my food turned into like school lunches of turkey and cheese sandwiches and pizza at my friend's house. But at home, things still stayed the same when it came to food. My mom was still making longanisa for breakfast, tapa for lunch, and Filipino spaghetti for dinner. So I think living in New York City, especially even being Filipino, Filipino food is such a huge part of our identity, and even my parents did not want to give that up when we changed, our scenery, and they would even drive 40 miles out to get their groceries from the city to keep that part of our their identity alive. So when I was 17, I moved back to the city, and I was reintroduced as an older young adult to all the flavors and cultures of this amazing city. New York is such a melting pot, which not only gives you opportunities to try different flavors, but also change the way you think and feel about food. We have a huge privilege in New York City that we're surrounded with such a diverse community that we get to taste every cuisine of the entire world. So the accessibility has definitely helped my career, not helped my career, but helped me grow as a person, and made me definitely a spoiled with my takeout habits. But it definitely opens up your mind, and every dining experience from every different culture leaves you wanting to learn more about the history and recipes and the people behind each dish, like who's cooking it. So, I think New York has had a huge impact in my upbringing, both East and West, but has definitely created this passion of food for me.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Christina. So our follow-up question was if you could tell us more about your career as a professional chef and how did you get into gastronomy as a career path?
Okay, so I think there was two major factors on why I started this, this career into gastronomy. I definitely grew up in this era where Food Network and the Cooking Channel was dominating the TV space. And, I'd come home after school, I'd watch Lydia on PBS cook amazing Italian food, and then Food Network was always on, so I was really inspired by seeing that on the TV, and then also, seeing my family cook at home. And when I was young, I would always watch a recipe on TV or see something in a book and want to try it after. So that was kind of like the early stages. And then second reason, honestly, is I really just like to eat. Eating is my favorite thing to do. So that's where it kind of all got started. And I went from a lot of no's from my parents. I think, I was young, I was naive, I didn't understand the hardships of what it takes to be a chef. And my parents were kind of like, we didn't move to America for you to work, in 80 hour, 90 hours a week. But I didn't see that in the TV, Food Network doesn't present that so easily when you see them cooking a recipe. So I got a no to culinary school. My parents were like, absolutely not. And then I got my undergrad in biology, where I found myself, skipping class. Probably shouldn't say that on radio, but I, found myself skipping class. I'd be cooking for my friends every night. We'd go out and I'd cook for everyone around the table, and that's where I really found like joy in life. So a month after I graduated with a biology degree, I enrolled in culinary school. From there, I was recommended in my first week of school to my now mentor and very good friend, Laurent Calcatore. So that was my first job in a kitchen, and I started right away after enrolling in school. It was there, I think, my career really began. I learned everything from A to Z, what it took to run a kitchen and to be part of a kitchen. I learned how to work really, really hard, and also how to stay humble. You know, a lot of what TV and kind of what now, you know, social media is a huge thing. I think what it shows is like being a chef, but it doesn't show, you know, the importance of every single role that it takes to run a kitchen. So, you know, I really learned how to work hard and keep humble and know that the dishwasher is just as important as a head chef. So I learned the grind of New York there. And then I moved to the south of France and worked in a Michelin star restaurant there, where I kind of learned how to slow down. And, you know, I left the bustle of the city and learned how to really appreciate ingredients, work with, you know, vegetables and fish that came either straight from the ground, straight from the Mediterranean Sea, and how to create dishes from the simplest of ingredients. And then from there, I moved on to 11 Madison Park, which was number one restaurant at the time. And there I kind of learned the military style of cooking. And I also had the pleasure and privilege of working with the best chefs from all around the globe. So I think that was an amazing, amazing push in my career. And I got to kind of mix all the things that I'd learned so far from Laurent and from working in France and then working in 11 Madison Park, and then combining that to kind of really round out my career as a chef. And a couple other restaurants. I mean, I could list out my resume, but I don't know if everyone wants to hear that. But, you know, COVID hit after, you know, I had been working for a few restaurants after 11 Madison. And then I took a really huge pivot in my career, where I joined a group of, you know, ex-colleagues and, you know, some new people, new faces, and worked for Rethink, which is an amazing nonprofit that really focuses on food waste, and in collaboration with 11 Madison Park. So we, you know, combines this, you know, our worlds of fine dining, and ended up making, you know, thousands of meals for hospital workers and frontliners and those in need at that time. So, you know, it went from fine dining to really this position where I was cooking with more purpose and with more meaning. So that kind of led me towards this route where I now work for a nonprofit in food education. So yeah, quite a roller coaster in terms of my career.
Yes. It's very interesting that learning that your background working on this like Michelin star restaurants in France and then in New York. And have you mentioned you're currently working in a nonprofit called Chefs for Impact. Could you tell us how and why you made the transition from working as a professional chef to working as a food educator? I know it sounds like a big change for you. And how did you make that transition?
Yeah, I think pre-COVID, if you asked me if I'd be a food educator, I would be surprised at that question. Because, you know, I think for many chefs, the goal is to kind of have your own restaurant where you have your own menu and story to tell. But truly, COVID and that experience with Rethink changed my life, so to speak, where you know, I kind of had to really sit down. You know, I had the time to really analyze what I was doing with my work, with my passion, with my time. And, you know, I'd been cooking in fine dining for quite some time. And the clientele there, you know, it's a certain clientele where, you know, they can afford to have these meals. at 300, 400, sometimes 400 a person. And when COVID hit, it really made me think about, what is food? What is the purpose of food? And why are we cooking it? Who are we cooking it for? And where is it going? So that transition kind of felt natural after Rethink, where I really wanted to do something with food where it really was intentional and served a purpose for the community as well.
Yeah, and I think that like what you're commenting us, it transitions very well for the question that I have for you, because I think that obviously platforms like this and programs like food studies in general, what we are trying to convey is thinking of food in a way that's further from our just experience with it in like cooking it or eating it or people that farm it, but just to like also get into the more social and cultural layers that lie in food and their importance in how we sustain ourselves in our subjectivities. So, yes, I think you've sort of touched upon the contrast in working as a chef versus a food educator. So the follow-up would be, how did your career change influence the way that you perceive yourself as a part of the food system? What are the layers of your work that influence the way that you position yourself as Cristina Ramos?
Oh, as Cristina Ramos. That's a big question. So the way the career change influenced the way I perceive my role in the system. I think that before this, before becoming a food educator myself, we know about culinary school, we know about, food and to a certain extent in America. But food education isn't provided as a mandatory class in elementary school, middle school, high school, unless you really go to these specific, high schools that they have in New York City, or you pay, $40,000 a year for an education in culinary school, which doesn't even touch the iceberg of the food system itself. I think it's something that is really lacking in our education system in the States. It's something that's provided, in places like Europe. These are classes that you learn and also live in other parts of the world. But for a country that consumes and produces so much food, we don't have any access to food education as a whole. I think fine dining has its place. I will always, all of my colleagues and friends, and they're part of the fine dining space till this day, which luckily survived COVID. But I there's this I highly regard them. I really respect the work that they do. But I think there needs to be more of an appreciation and I don't know how to word this. I think we need to find more importance in food education for younger people rather than having it only accessible via culinary programs that you have to pay for, or these high prestigious schools. I think it should be accessible for anyone at any as a universal program as a whole. I think as a chef versus food educator, I think it's the same. It's still there's a stress that I have still as a as an educator, where I still want them to learn as much as they can in such a little time, right? I think time is such an important thing as a chef that you don't have. And to get kids engaged and take as much as they can, since I have such little time with them every single day. But I think that this change in my career has really shown the lack of food education in these schools in general, in the States and in New York, and how we need to provide more of it and have more funding and more help federally to provide these programs to everyone of all ages.
Yeah.
Thank you, Christina. And it's nice that you talk about your experiences in culinary school and use that experience to think about the accessibility of food education, not just with, like, for everyone. It's for, like, be inclusive. Can you talk about the contrast, or could you share us what kind of teaching approach or philosophies in teaching do you follow that you think that this culinary school lack and that you do now as a food educator at Chefs Per Impact? It's for, like, touch base and for the audience to know what you do in Chefs Per Impact.
Yeah, so our nonprofit Chefs for Impact is focused on food education with highlighting seasonal and sustainable products. So I think my approach and philosophy is really not kind of pointing and yelling at the kids, buy organic, buy sustainable, buy this, do this. It's really considering their accessibility to these kind of products. Right? Healthy food isn't the cheapest in America, which is another topic. We can have another podcast for that. But, you know, organic always isn't cheapest. So it's about having, you know, kids that don't have access to fresh produce every single day, like trying to change their philosophy on food, how they see it, and how they can make these little tiny changes to their eating habits so that it's better for them and also better for the planet.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, honestly, a subject that we need to touch upon, because accessibility means everything. Unfortunately, in this country, having access to better choices also is very linked to class issues. And we have the whole situation with food apartheid that it can simply not be, it's not a topic that you can circulate around, because it's a topic that directly informs what people have access to in terms of quality foods. And it's also something that shapes the way that people engage with food in their intimate relationships, right? So obviously when you've grown up eating industrialized diets, those also become affective patterns in your diet that deconstructing is difficult and it's hard and it's sensitive, such as stop eating tortillas because they have a lot of carbs. You know, it goes beyond that. It's just, you know, an intimate relationship we build with our food habits. So I think that you having that flexibility and providing that space for intimacy, it's taking that to another layer. It's knowing how those intricacies take a play in the way that our kids eat and in the way that we as an adults consume food and give meaning to the food that we eat. So I wanted to ask you, what do you enjoy the most about being a food educator? What of this brings pleasure to you?
Oh, goodness. So many things. I think the biggest thing is really the kids. You know, I'm really privileged to be able to do this as my job every day. I get to cook, which is what I love doing. Yeah. But also do it with kids, which is, you know, it's challenging at points, but overall, everybody loves to cook. Everybody loves food. Everyone, you know, enjoys. There's such an amazing power that food has over everyone, where we can be able to be from all different backgrounds, all different ages, sizes. But once there's, like, food in front of us, we can all connect in some way. So really seeing the kids be so engaged with recipes and being eager and excited to cook something together, really has been the best part of this.
That's so great. You kind of mentioned a while ago your process of you being in culinary school and in the conversation within, like, being a Filipino family and in a Filipino household in New York City. And I want to shift to, like, talking about your career. And you talk about what you love about being a food educator. But have you ever experienced any challenges being a Filipino-American chef and also being a woman in culinary industry when you work as a chef in this Michelin star restaurant and also now as a food educator at Chefs for Impact? And could if you have some examples and that you could share with us?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there are some advantages and disadvantages. I think there's advantages in being a Filipino-American chef because we get to bring our story into the kitchen, our flavors, our foods, which are all delicious, I have to just say, which is an amazing thing to be able to share with people. And, you know, there are definitely some challenges when it comes to one, just being a chef in general and being a woman in the culinary industry. I think there's a lot to prove, right? You know, stepping as a woman in not only a kitchen, but anywhere in any sector industry, you know, there is some air that you need to prove yourself before you even begin. So I think it's made me a stronger chef. I think I come in hot and I prove myself very quickly because I think that's the way people kind of perceive you. But in turn, it makes you have to work twice as hard. It makes you have to prove yourself twice as much. But at the end of the day, it only makes us women chefs stronger. So I'm grateful for that experience.
And not to like throw Raya under the bus here, but she's also a very great cook who has been working in restaurants in New York. And I think that it is always so, and she's also Filipino. So I think this was like a beautiful opportunity for us to like create that layer of intimacy because, I mean, and Raya, please share because it's your own experience. But I mean, just hearing you, I see a lot of the things that I admire in her personally and the things that she accomplishes. Yeah. Within her role in the food system, so
your experiences, my versus my experiences, I have like nothing compared.
Oh,
to,
stop it! So,
but like you inspired me so much because I was at the point I was in New York City, if you know, Fitzpatrick, Manhattan, for my internship because I'm from the Philippines and I went here for like culinary internship. And working in New York, like, you know, the stress, it's a fast-paced city, working like 60 hours a week. And I was at the point after my internship that I don't want to do working in the kitchen anymore. Like, I want to cook when I want to cook, you know what I mean? And like working in the kitchen, I don't know, that just stressed me out. And like knowing about you and your background, like, being a woman, like, hey, I can actually do it, you know, like, it's just so inspiring. And I also love kids so much. And teaching kids is also one of my dreams. And like, now I think like, yeah, it's possible. And like, just hearing from you, like, it's really possible to like, be in your dreams and just follow your dreams. And like, not being a woman is not like a hindrance to do that, actually. And like I'm small too, so I think it's just being a woman being small.
I'm 5'3". You just have to buy tall shoes. It's fine. You can reach the shelf.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so amazing. Thank you so much for those kind words. I you know, I don't think that being a female has been a hindrance because I don't see it that way, but you know, anything is possible. We built this nonprofit from the ground up, so when there's a will, there's a way, right?
Yeah, I like that.
Yes, and honestly, so we haven't talked about Chefs for Impact a lot. I had like one question that I want to touch base upon, but after it, if you have the time, I would love to run us over how you build from the ground up this nonprofit and the work that you do, like maybe share an example with us of the curricula and the learning programs. But before we do that, I wanted to ask you, who are the people that have influenced your palate and your artistry as a chef? So your tastemakers, we have this context of like, yes, things, foods, and people that mark the way that we taste stuff and pleasure for eating.
Oh, that's a big question. I think A lot of it, right at the root of it, it's your family, like my family that really creates like my standard of flavor. It's just salty, acidic, vinegary, like that. My palate, that side of my palate is 100% Filipino, which also kind of, it reminds me of like Spanish food as well. And then a huge part of my career has been working for French chefs and living in France as well. Learning about the simplicity of ingredients and really highlighting these simple ingredients themselves and cooking with intention and really appreciating and respecting a product has made me pretty much half French. I like learn the language. I love the culture. So that definitely influenced my palate. And then just all the people I've met along the way, I've had the opportunity to cook with so many people around the globe from all countries, and each way every person has really influenced the way I cook, and also have given me opportunities to taste foods from their hometown. So I've been influenced, I feel like, globally in a way, which is
What a treat. What a
yeah,
treat.
it's I'm forever grateful, forever grateful.
So, Raya, what do you think if we do this discussion about the nonprofit before your last question? Does that sound great? Okay. So, if you wanted to go with us about the process of creating Chefs for Impact and the work that you do with the kids.
Yeah, so this nonprofit was founded by Olivia Chassé, our almighty leader. She is amazing philanthropist, and she found during the pandemic that there was a huge lack in food education, coming from the south of France, where food is just general, knowledge. She found the lack of it in here in New York. So she started this nonprofit in hopes of bringing food education to classrooms and also to adults through dining events. So Chefs for Impact has both adult programming and youth programming. The adult programming is really focused on dining events, kind of cooking workshops, and then we bring all these players from fine dining, the fine dining world, to come in and join these adult programming events to kind of cook with more with purpose, cook with intention, and to highlight local farmers and producers around the tri-state area. And then our youth programming, which is more hands-on with the kids, right? I visit various schools, public schools, private and community centers throughout New York City, where I kind of bring a kitchen to the classroom and I teach them a lesson on either what's in season or a topic that's around sustainability. And then what makes it extremely special is we bring in expert partners, which are food industry players. They could be chefs, Michelin star chefs, farmers, beekeepers, urban farmers, to the composting facility. So kind of showing kids the full spectrum of where food comes from, how do you cook with it, and then what do you do after. When you're done. So, trying to give them a full perspective on the food industry and the cycle of where food goes. So, I me alongside my colleague Theodora, we kind of take on building a nonprofit, and with the guidance of Olivia, we've been able to create something really, really amazing, where we get to educate people on food and show what really matters in the industry.
Thank you so much. That's like literally so refreshing to hear that those spaces are having more of a social arena today, because we do know that a lot of people are putting effort locally into these type of spaces and nourishing this type of education with children. And hopefully this is going to have a huge impact indeed for future generations and the way that they think of food and engage with food. And just like also the way that we work with our humanity per se. So
yeah, it's also nice that Chef for Impact focuses on like diversity and inclusivity within community, knowing that New York is also like a diverse city, but it's just nice to like touch base and also like talk about us. Chef Christina, is there any advice that you have received early on from the chefs that inspired you or influenced you and the people around you that motivated you that you can share with us just to empower us and especially the people who want to make differences through their passion and also the skills that they have? Like, what advice can you like share with us?
It can be your own advice. It doesn't need to be something that someone told you, but something that you might want to tell other people.
I think it's something, I'll take some, this is advice I was given very early on, you know, the pressure and the glitz and the glam of gastronomy and fine dining. You know, you work 80, 90 hours a week, I've had opportunities to travel the world and meet amazing people. But I think the best advice for me was to stay humble. You know, you can't, as amazing as these opportunities have been, I think I've really kept reminding myself, like, what is really important when cooking food. You know, I think a couple of chefs would probably yell at me for this, but you know, I've worked really hard, but I've always reminded myself to, you know, have fun while doing it and also take care of others around me while doing it. So, you know, stay humble, be kind, you know, hug your dishwasher. You know, no one is better than anyone in the kitchen. I think, you know, there's hierarchy in fine cuisine and just remembering that, you know, every single person in that kitchen is really important and any person in an organization, right? It shifts into any world. So to stay humble and just to be kind to everyone.
Have like anything to share? Like, you work a lot of like Michelin star restaurants, and you can also like touch base with that. Like, that's just interesting to like learn for the audience.
Yeah, to talk about Michelin star experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how do I do this? You know, I started working with, my first job was with a French chef, my mentor, Laurent Calcature, who has, worked at the best restaurants in France and in New York. And through his mentorship, I really learned a lot in such little time. So it's so important in kitchens. I think what I've learned throughout the years is that you're really just passing along knowledge on the way. So to be able to have the opportunity to work with someone so amazing as him, I think I owe it to him that I learned like the foundation of cooking through that experience. And then from there, I moved on to working at a 1 Michelin star gluten-free restaurant in the south of France. France is different than New York, right? In New York, you are plugging away, you're working to do 300, 400 covers a night. Where in France, where I really learned that you have to respect service, respect quality, respect the food, where we do probably 50 covers is like a max there, at a 12 course dinner. So there, it was an amazing experience where, you know, farmers would come drop off the produce early morning. You know, you get up at 8, Sorry, what am I saying? You get to work at 8. Get to work at 8 and you get the fresh produce. Like I'd get asparagus straight from the ground with dirt still inside it. Mushrooms fresh from the forest. And then we'd have fresh fish coming in from the sea. So it was really an amazing opportunity to see really where does food come from. I think New York City gives us so much access to everything. You can get tuna from Japan like within a day. You can order truffles from France and have it overnight shipped. In the south of France, you really had to utilize the food that you had around you, and sustainability and seasonality is just a way of life there. So that was a beautiful experience to be able to cook alongside locals, and then also forced to learn a language. So that was an amazing experience. Beautiful, beautiful region of France, the south. I'm south all the way. Paris is cool, but south of France is just way cooler.
More rural.
Yeah, it's like the countryside, so it's wine country, vineyards everywhere. You have the sea, and then like all the cliffs of they're called the Canonques. Just like beautiful mountains everywhere. It's like a movie. Yeah, that was really an eye-opening experience because I learned that eating and purchasing seasonally was wasn't just like trendy or cool. It's the way of life there, and understanding and really creating a relationship with farmers directly that either caught the fish or took the asparagus out of the ground, meeting these people and having a conversation with them rather than it being transactional like it is in New York City. Eleven Madison Park, obviously a very big restaurant in New York City and in the world. Three Michelin stars. It was number one in the world, and there I think you learn kind of the machine of it all. How does a big house operate, and how to really push yourself to the extreme. So very different from the south of France. I mean, south of France, the days were long, but there's a I think an appreciation of life there. But 11 Madison Park was really just challenging yourself and seeing how far you can push the boundary and in how you work. And then also it's like the Olympics, right? You're surrounded by the best of the best around the world. And that just pushes you even more. So that was, very intense. But from there I created the best relationships that I'll, with chefs that I'll keep forever for the rest of my life. Yeah, amazing experience. I learned a lot there from everyone. It's a kitchen of 100 people. Every single person had an impact on me. So it was a very cool experience, but very challenging.
That is so great to hear. That is so good. I'm like, yeah, my experiences is nothing.
Oh,
But
stop it. I mean, listen, these doors aren't closed for anyone, right? Like there's opportunity everywhere, especially now where it's hard to find good cooks and good chefs in the industry, but you can make your future really what you want it to be. I was in biology school, and I had no idea that my life was going to take me here, but you really just, I never see a door as closed, really. You just have to go for it. And I'm just a normal girl living in a crazy world.
I think also like just pushing ourselves like as minorities to be in that mentality that we have like what it takes and we deserve to be in spaces, like never feeling know why we're here. Like if you get your foot on the door and someone opens the door, it's because they're choosing to open that door to you, so you don't have anything to prove. You're already there.
Right, just kick it. I mean, I think, you know, we're all, I think it's instilled in us, right? If you're either first generation or immigrant, you have this fire in you where you have to do something harder, or you know, you have this drive to push to succeed. So I think that's definitely given me a, like, it's helped me in my chef career, because I've always wanted to push and persevere every challenge.
It's just so empowering, like just hearing everything from you, and like it's inspiring, and like I hope everyone also like got inspired, and for sure they will be when they hear this, but just like it's just so nice, and like thank you for sharing that and for empowering us.
Definitely. Aww, thank you so much for sharing your time with us and having these conversations. We couldn't be more honored, and this has been just so enriching for us personally, but we are very excited to edit the podcast and see how the final product comes out. And, you know, at least I know that the people here doing food studies are going to be very pumped to hear about this conversation and go into it.
Thank you so much for
guys.
And if we're in New York, we're going to hit you up. And we
we gotta go get some Filipino food.
Yes. I was actually last weekend, like this weekend, I went to Queens because my thesis is Filipino restaurant.
You should go to Dollar Hits. Dollar Hits is nice.
Oh yeah. I went to Cabecera and
They're the best. I love her.
Renee? No, that's Renee.
Yeah, Renee.
Nice kitchen. Yeah. So good.
Awesome. Oh, thank you so much for having me. This was so fun. This is my first podcast.
Thank you.
Definitely not the last.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you guys ever need.
Feel honored.
Guys, you guys are amazing. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Podcast, and we wanted to do it like with someone who's really going to inspire us.
Yeah.
And thank you. For
I'm going to go cry after this. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much.
All right, enjoy your day. Good luck with editing and you know, all the other podcasts you're going to do.
Thank you.
Bye. Amazing work, guys. Thank you.
Bye.
Ciao.
Okay, so we just wrapped up the podcast. And so now we're just going to talk about our thoughts about some of the topics that we covered and some of the themes. Who wants to start with some of the things that stuck out to them?
So yes, Christina was kind of discussing with us that she enjoyed a lot her work as a chef, intellectually, professionally, and culturally. It had significance for her to provide food and to create food from the space of food as art and infusion and culturally significant spaces, but her need also started to go within the realms of communitarian engagement and the constrictions that that can have within a restaurant space, which is something that definitely I think might be interesting to address, how restaurants perform communitarian engagement. So I don't know if you wanna talk about that, Raya, for a bit, like, yes, like what's the role of the restaurant in involving its communities and creating social impact?
Working in like fine dining restaurants, really like inspires her. First, like she went to like culinary school, and she view herself like working in culinary school, and she wanted to make like a difference in her community by like thinking that everyone can learn the skills and value of being a chef and working in a restaurant through food education. And she uses the skills that she got from working in this fine dining to be an inspiration when she transitioned to food educate as a food educator. and her like inspiration, her love for food through the community she was with, like the family, being a Filipino household in New York, really like made a difference. And I asked her about like how was it being a woman and being in like, a Filipino American fine dining kitchen industry, and didn't like give that up. It's not a problem for her, which is like inspiring. And she said this, like, when there's a will, there's a way when it comes to like finding your passion.
I thought it was really interesting that she didn't think that her race or her gender were a deterrent for her professionally. Like you said, it was inspiring for you because, you know, you guys share an identity in those exact ways. But for me, I actually felt like it's good that she didn't feel like it was a deterrent, but so many other people actually do experience racism within the industry. And we did learn recently when we were studying the founder of Mission Chinese. And how one of his goals was to make sure that he created an equitable workplace for people of color where they didn't feel the pressures of both their race and their gender. He wanted to break down a lot of those barriers and create a safe space. There was a lot of controversy around that, but I thought that it was very important that it is acknowledged that those spaces are necessary within an industry that's so cutthroat and competitive, you know. But I am glad that she didn't feel that it was necessary for her to necessarily like focus on that. But I just found that kind of ironic.
Yeah, me too. Especially because she did like mention, and like throughout the interview, we can see that she does have a community that it's close by within her restaurant work. But the fact that she made that bridge, like, no, working for the nonprofit is working with community. You know, like, she did address her peers as her community, but for her to like to look for community, she had to make a different career decision. So yeah, that was like, how do restaurant spaces create communitarian access beyond the dinner table? And like specifically in fine dining, because we do know that like ethnic restaurants perform a big role in their communities because they're outlets for sharing culturally relevant foods, and there are outlets to meet people from your own ethnicity once you migrated to a new place in countries like America or Europe, etc. But like when we talk about fine dining, the context is not that at all. So in that, like, and also her decision of saying it's not only nonprofit, but it's nonprofit focused entirely on an education program for the youth. So what are the implications of creating community through passing legacies, you know, to children?
Absolutely.
And obviously her demographics are mostly Latino and Latinx and Black folk.
And even now, like in nonprofit, they also host fundraising dinners, and they invited people to eat with them, and they talk about sustainability also, and like community and education. So it's not just kids, like her teaching kids in high school and kindergarten, but just fundraising dinners. It's also like the talk, like how do you help community? How can you eat sustainably and responsibly? And like eating healthy, and they use that like fundraising to actually fund the nonprofit like food education, which is I like with that.
She did mention that some of her colleagues chefs were like pulling up to make those dinners.
Oh yeah,
which I thought was cool.
I thought that was really cool too. Yeah. That's a solid network to have. Let me tell you, that's cultural capital.
So, what are teaching philosophies? Something I found remarkable was her saying that she was not trying to push an agenda onto the kids of like, now that you're in this program, your diet is changing, and like your food cosmologies and the way that you perceive food needs to be radically impacted by this, but like reeling it in and seeing it like as a progression, and understanding that obviously breaking patterns of eating industrialized food when that's the only thing that you have accessible, and what when that type of food is what gets you through the day and what keeps you alive and sustains yourself, it's
a delicate balance.
It's a delicate balance, and it also can like fall under elitism. So it is important to have that sensibility, because these foods
are integrated into diets because people don't have economical access, but then they also become culturally significant foods and yes. foods with emotional ties to it, because you remember that you eat export sodas with your grandma mm-hmm. watching TV, or you eat chimborazo at a specific time of the day mm-hmm. and it's like a comfort snack, etc. Mm-hmm. So just having consideration that everyone, including people with like poor people mm-hmm. have ties to mm-hmm. what they eat mm-hmm. and have a relationship to the things that they experience. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're alienated from their lives and they're just existing.
Exactly. Which is oddly kind of a common narrative when it comes to food discourse, yeah. especially food education discourse. Yeah. So I'm really loving that you brought that up, to be honest with you. Yeah. I did love that she also felt like it was a progression, not like a totalitarian method of teaching kids to eat healthily. I do like that she is very cognizant of that, that it can be very elitist, and that she's taking a lot of steps to prevent that. I did appreciate that so much.
It's like good to focus on also inclusivity, like everyone don't get left out, it's just like alienated, and that's what I like about her being like a food educator.
I had a great time. I hope we continue to have opportunities to have those types of discussions with different professionals. I feel very honored that Christina was able and willing to share that space with us. Yes. And I personally learned a lot from having that conversation with her.
Me too. I learned a lot listening to you guys. It was really inspirational. I loved it so much.
I was glad that Christina was available for us to make this conversation, and yeah, hopefully a lot can be like inspired with what she said and what she shared to us.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much, and thank you, Christina. Goodbye.
Bye.